सर्वेषां सुप्रभातम्। Can you hear me? Is my voice here? Okay, thank you. We'll start this class. योगेन चित्तस्य पदेन वाचां मलं शरीरस्य च वैद्यकेन योपाकरोत्तं प्रवरं मुनीनां पतञ्जलिं प्राञ्जलिरानतोऽस्मि। योग सूत्र परिचय कक्षायाः सप्तदशः वर्गः। सो we'll start with a review of the previous class. So we discussed about drishyam, and the very purpose of existence of drishyam is for the purusha. Tadartha eva drishyasya atma. So drishya exists only for the purpose of the drashta. Drishya in the form of the world, the objects, and drishya in the form of the senses, drishya in the form of the body and the mind, everything exists for the purpose of purusha or the atma. And then the next sutra says, kritartham prati nashtam api anashtam tat anya sadharanatvat. Kritartha refers to a purusha who has attained the liberation. So from that purusha's point of view, from that soul's point of view, though no prakriti exists, but still as other purushas exist, as bonded in the state of bondage, so the prakriti exists for them. So that is the point here. Here it says that the purushas attain liberation, whereas prakriti continues to exist. And the purushas are many, the jivatmas are many in number, and they attain liberation one by one. And the next sutra speaks about sanyogaha. That is, swaswami shaktyoh swarupopalabdhi hetuhu sanyogaha. That is, the connection, the conjunction between the prakriti and the purusha is for the realization of the nature of both swashakti and swami shakti. Swa here refers to drishyam, and swami here refers to drashta, the purusha. So because of this conjunction between prakriti and purusha, both the nature of prakriti and the purusha are known. By knowing the nature of prakriti or realizing the form of the prakriti, it is understood that it has to be shed. And by knowing the form of the purusha, it is understood that it is the one which is to be realized. Oh, I hope now it is fine. Okay, right. So that is the purpose of Sanyoga, realizing the nature of both Prakriti and Purusha. But the purpose of knowing the nature of Prakriti and Purusha is the knowledge of Prakriti helps to overcome or shed the identity with Prakriti, and the knowledge of Purusha helps to realize the nature of the Purusha. And Sanyoga Hetuhu is discussed in the 24th Sutra. The conjunction between Prakriti and Purusha happens because of what? Because of the cause, that is avidya. Tasya hetuhu avidya. The cause of connection between Prakriti and Purusha is avidya. And how to attain Kaivalya? It says that when avidya is overcome, tad abhavat, when avidya's abhava is achieved, when one overcomes avidya, or when one becomes capable of destroying avidya, what happens is naturally the result or the effect of avidya, that is the conjunction between Prakriti and Purusha, also ends, and that is the state to be achieved, and tat drishehe kaivalyam. So that is stated. So by the cessation of avidya, the connection between Prakriti and Purusha ceases, and this is the state called as hanam, the state to be achieved. And this hanam in yoga parlance is called as kaivalyam, or the final state of liberation. So thus far we discussed in the previous class. Now we move ahead. Okay. Right. So the next sutra discusses about Hana Upayaha. Hanopayaha. Hana, as we discussed just now, Hana refers to Kaivalyam or the liberation. Upayaha, the means to attain that Kaivalyam. So what is the means to attain Kaivalyam? That is Sattva Purusha Anyata Khyatihi or Viveka Khyatihi. So the upaya, the one and only upaya to attain that hanam is viveka khyati, attainment of viveka khyati. So khyati refers to knowledge. What kind of knowledge? Viveka knowledge. What is this viveka? How do we understand this term viveka? Viveka refers to sattva purusha anyata khyatihi. This is not anyatha, this is anyata, anyatvam. So the difference, anyatvam. So anyatvam of sattva or the buddhi and the purusha. Sattva here refers to the buddhi. So the difference between sattva and purusha, sattva, the buddhi and the purusha, is sattva purusha anyata. And khyati is knowledge. So the knowledge of the fact that sattva, the buddhi, and purusha, the atma, are anya, different. That is viveka khyati. So viveka khyati refers to the clear knowledge or clear understanding or realization that sattva, buddhi, sattva or buddhi, and purusha, the soul, are distinct, are not identical. So this clear knowledge is hanopaya. This is the knowledge that will destroy avidya, which will lead to kaivalyam. And what kind of a viveka khyati is hanopaya? That is also qualified in the same sutra, viveka khyati hi aviplava. So the the Viveka Khyati should be Aviplava, which means that it should not be infirm. Plavate refers to floating. So the Viveka Khyati, this clarity, the knowledge, this clear knowledge should not float around. It should be firm, which means this knowledge of Viveka Khyati should not be an on and off scenario. Sometimes you understand this and sometimes you enter into avidya. So such a Viveka Khyati will not lead to moksha or the kaivalya, whereas aviplava, a Viveka Khyati that is very firm. So how to make that Viveka Khyati firm? Anivritta Mithyajnana Plavate, which means, so the correct knowledge exists, but if it exists with the continuation of the wrong knowledge also, which means that you still have the samskaras of previous wrong knowledge, then the correct knowledge will often be intruded by the thoughts arising from the samskaras of the wrong knowledge of the past. So yoga says it is not enough only to attain knowledge. The knowledge will become firm only when the mind is cleansed. So when there is so the cleansing should also happen, the cleansing of the flushing out of the previous wrong knowledge by continuous practice of yoga will help in firming up the clear knowledge about the difference between the non-identical nature of Prakriti and Purusha. So what essentially we reach or understand by this is avidya is overcome by Viveka Khyati. Viveka Khyati, what kind of a Viveka Khyati? Avidya is overcome by a Viveka Khyati which is really firm. So the firmness or the steadiness of Viveka Khyati is ensured by the fading away or the total removal of mithya jnanam, wrong knowledge. So this is described as hanopaya. So we have seen that the chaturvyuha, so the discussion started with the concept of chaturvyuha, the four steps to attain kaivalya or the four pronged approach of yoga. So heyam was presented, heyam dukkham. Dukkham or suffering was presented as heyam, or the suffering that is yet to come that was presented as heyam. And then the heya hetu, heya hetu, the cause for the dukkham was discussed. Heya hetu was discussed as the sanyoga. Prakriti Purusha Sanyoga as the Heya Hetu was presented. Hanam was described as the cessation of conjunction between Prakriti and Purusha. The cessation of connection between Prakriti and Purusha was discussed, and then that the state of Kaivalyam was presented as Hanam. And then Hanopayaha, the method or the tool that will lead to that Hanam, that was also presented in this sutra, that is Aviplava Viveka Khyati. So this Chaturvyuha has been completed. So this theme of the four-pronged approach to attain the goal of yoga has been concludes with this sutra, that is the 26th sutra of the second pada. So, on the attainment of this Viveka Khyati, Aviplava Viveka Khyati, so gradually a person reaches Kaivalya. So, this next sutra is a wonderful sutra. It presents the workings of the mind of a person who has attained that Viveka Khyati. So, what is the direction which the mind of a person who has attained Viveka Khyati will take? So, in a way, this is having a peek or having a look into the workings of the mind of a Jivan Mukta. So, the sutra says, Tasya Saptadha Pranta Bhumihi Prajna, the 27th sutra states that the person who has attained Viveka Khyati in seven stages, he will reach the final liberation. So, Pranta Bhumihi. Bhumi in the context of yoga means the states of mind. Pranta, anta means end. Pra is the final. It adds more to the end. This is not just the intermediate end. This is the final end. So that is pranta. Pranta bhumi. It is the final end. The states of the mind at the very fag end of the worldly existence. That is described by the term pranta bhumi. So when what kind of prajna, what kind of a clarity of knowledge will exist in the final states of mind just before liberation, that will exist. So the Yoga Sutra Patanjali says seven different kinds of experiences will be there in the mind of such a Jivan Mukta who possesses Aviplava Viveka Khyati. So what are those? So they are further divided into Karya Vimukti and Chitta Vimukti. So the seven bhumis are divided into Karya Vimukti and Chitta Vimukti. Karya Vimukti, four states of Vimukti, freedom from Karya, all kinds of works. So the four stages refer to the four kinds of workings of the mind. Freedom from the four kinds of workings of the mind of a Jivan Mukta who has attained Viveka Khyati. So what are those? The first stage is Jignyasa Nivrittihi. So Nivrittihi, retirement. So what retires from his mind is Jignyasa. Jnatavyam akhilam jnatam. All that needs to be known has been known, and hence there is no jignyasa. Nothing remains to be known. So this is the first state. So jignyasa nivritti is the first state among these seven states of mind of a Jivan Mukta. Then comes jihasa nivrittihi. So, what kind of a thing retires? So, in all these, you see the word nivritti. So, retires or it simply fades out. So, jignyasa goes away. And then jihasa means hatavyam. All that has to be renounced has been renounced. Hatavyam refers to, or jihasa refers to, all that needs to be shed, renounced, has been renounced. Nothing remains in me to be renounced. So that is the second state, which is called as jihasa nivritti. And then the third state of mind of a Jivan Mukta is prepsa nivritti. So this is again the retirement of the thought or the notion of prepsa. What is prepsa? Prepsa is the desire to obtain things, the desire to get things. So no desire will exist in the mind to get something, to acquire something, to obtain something for oneself. So that will also retire. That kind of a thought will also retire. So the yogi will be in a state of mind where he is fulfilled. Nothing remains in his mind. No desire to attain things will remain in his mind. That is prepsa nivritti. And then the fourth state of karya vimukti is chikirsha nivritti. So what kind of a thinking pattern will come to rest now is chikirsha. Kartum icha chikirsha. So all the desires to do something, kartum icha. So he will feel that all that needs to be done has been done. So that is chikirsha nivritti. No thoughts will linger in his mind regarding his kartavya or his responsibility or duty. All sense of duty or responsibility or the necessity of performing certain actions, that will float away from his mind. So the first four stages, which are called as the freedom from the workings of the mind, so that is achieved. Jijnyasa nivrittihi, jihasa nivrittihi. Oh, again the sound. Okay, let me try. Okay. So I think it should be some the intermittent nature of the sound is probably due to the internet connection. So I apologize for that. Okay. So jijnyasa nivrittihi, jihasa nivrittihi, prepsa nivrittihi, chikirsha nivrittihi. So these are probably like the crust of the earth, the upper level of working of the mind. So desire to know, desire to renounce, desire to attain, desire to do, all these seems to be the upper level of working of the mind. Now to the deeper level of the mind. So from the deeper bonds, the deeper the connections that keep the mind in the world, that is called as chitta vimukti. The mind itself is released from the harbor. So that which connects, so the anchor or that which connects the mind with the world, that is overcome in the chitta vimukti stage. So the actions of the mind was overcome in the first four stage. In the final three states of mind of a jivan mukta, the very fine connections that keeps the mind connected with all the activities of the world, that is removed. Shoka nivrittihi. These are very easy terms. Shoka nivrittihi. Shoka is sorrow. All kinds of sorrow are overcome. See, we can see that again, I'll just complete this. Shoka nivrittihi. Sufferings. All kinds of sufferings are overcome. No suffering remains in the mind. And bhaya nivrittihi, all kinds of fears are overcome after that. So he fears from none. And vikalpa nivrittihi, and no imaginary knowledge remains. All the knowledge, vikalpa refers to, you might recall that among the five chitta vrittis, Vikalpa is there. Vikalpa is imagination. So all kinds of vikalpas, all kinds of imaginary knowledges, all that goes away and only the true knowledge of the self exists. So these are the three final states of Chitta Vimukti. So when we see, when we compare the Karya Vimukti and the Chitta Vimukti, the Karya Vimuktis are of the nature of the current activities of the mind. Whereas when we see Shoka, Bhaya and Vikalpa Nivritti, they seem to be more connected with the samskaras. So the first Karya Vimukti level indicates overcoming the Chitta Vrittis themselves, a certain pattern of Chitta Vrittis. These four patterns of Chitta Vrittis are overcome, and at the second stage of a Jivan Mukta, where we see Chitta Vimukti, is overcome. Shoka is due to samskara, Bhaya is due to samskara, and Vikalpa is due to samskara. So all these three which emerge from the samskaras, they are also overcome. So thus, this is the Vaibhava, or this is the great stage, or this is the great stage that a Jivan Mukta attains on possessing Aviplava Viveka Khyati. So it is wonderful to note that this wonderful description, great description about Jivan Mukti, comes just before the commencement of the Ashtanga Yoga. So why could this be? Why is there a very beautiful description of the state of mind of Jivan Mukta just before the Ashtanga Yoga? So I feel that it is to create an attraction. Oh, these wonderful states of minds can be achieved. So it is to attract a sadhaka, or a practitioner, or a person who is thinking about practicing yoga, to attract him and to make him practice yoga. This is kind of a pralobhanam. Patanjali places these very strategically, so that by these the desire to attain liberation is enhanced, and being impelled by that strong desire, a person launches himself into the practice of yoga. So here ends the philosophical, very deep philosophical aspects of yoga with regard to the second chapter. So it began with Kriya Yoga, and then as part of Kriya Yoga, Kleshas were mentioned. Description and Klesha was taken up. And then the Chatur Vyuha. Heyam, Heya Hetu, Hanam, Hanopayaha was discussed. The fourfold approach of yoga was discussed. And then a wonderful presentation on the state of the final states of the mind of a Jivan Mukta was laid before us by sage Patanjali. And after this, after the Sutra 27, we enter into the Ashtanga Yoga. So this Ashtanga Yoga, as we know, is begun with an introduction. Yogaanganushthanat ashuddhikshaye jnanadeeptihi avivekakhyatehe. So the 28th sutra is the one which introduces the term Ashtanga or Yoganga. Yoganga anushthanat, by the practice of the limbs of yoga, what happens is ashuddhikshaye. So it helps in the reduction or gradual eradication of Ashuddhi impurities. So, the removal of impurities from where? From the Chitta. So, not only at the Chitta, it begins from the level of body and it ends up in cleaning up the mind from avidya. So, Ashuddhi Kshaye Jnana Deeptihi. Deeptihi, the flame of knowledge. So, this by the practice of Ashtanga Yoga, the impurities reduce and then the flame of knowledge increases and gradually culminates in Viveka Khyati. So, three aspects are mentioned here. By the practice of Ashtanga Yoga, Ashuddhis are the, so the Ashtanga Yoga practice is directly associated with Ashuddhi Kshaya, reduction or gradual diminishing of the Ashuddhi or impurities, and then as the impurities reduce, the flame of knowledge increases, and this flame of knowledge that which increases culminates in Viveka Khyati. So, this is how Ashtanga Yoga works. Ashuddhi Kshaya, Jnana Deepti, and finally it leads to Viveka Khyati. So, the Prayojana or the mechanism of working of the limbs of yoga is presented in a threefold way in the 28th Sutra. And now in the 29th Sutra, we find the eight limbs of yoga, namely Yamaha, Niyamaha, Asanam, Pranayamaha, Pratyaharaha, Dharana, Dhyanam, Samadhi. So, these eight limbs are listed out in the 29th Sutra. And it is to be noted that in the second pada, among the eight limbs, discussion exists only till the fifth limb, that is Pratyahara. So, in the remaining portion of the second pada of Yoga Sutra, Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, only these five aspects will be discussed. And it is in the third pada that the remaining three limbs, Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi, will be discussed. So, till the end of the second pada, the discussion will go on till the Pratyahara limb, the fifth Yoganga. The last three will be found in the second chapter. Why? Because Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi, as will be explained later, are called as Antarangas, and the first five are called as Bahirangas, or indirect methods, or not immediate causes. So, Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama and Pratyahara are not the immediate causes of liberation, whereas they assist, they play a supportive role. They play a preparative role in the process of achieving the goal of yoga. Whereas, Dharana, Jhana and Samadhi are called as Antarangas, which are immediate causes, which are the causes which immediately or directly lead to the final goal of yoga. And so, Patanjali has separated these Bahirangas from the Antaranga. Though they are essentially the part of the same Ashtanga Yoga, but still the Patanjali demonstrates a gradation between the first five limbs and the next three as Antaranga and Bahiranga. The first five are Bahirangas and the last three, Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi, are called as Antarangas. So, Antaranga discussion will be taken up from the third pada. Bahiranga discussion will be completed in the second pada itself. So this is the organization of the discussion on Ashtanga Yoga in the Yoga Sutra. Now we move into Yama and Niyama. So Unit 7. So Unit 7 is the discussion on Yama and Niyama. Probably it spans about 15 sutras. In 15 sutras, we find the discussion on Yama and Niyama. So this clearly emphasizes the importance of these two, Yama and Niyama, the initial practices of Yama and Niyama. Whereas you will see that for pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, the other bahirangas, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, for the other three limbs, each of the limb will be devoted two or three sutras, only that much. Whereas Yama and Niyama have been dealt in detail in the Yoga Sutras, so which lays the importance of emphasizes the importance of Yama and Niyama. So, right. Now to the Sutra 30. The 30th Sutra lists the Yamas. Ahimsa, Satyam, Asteyam, Brahmacharyam, Aparigraha. So these five are Yamas. Yamas include these five components. Ahimsa, Satyam, Asteyam, Brahmacharyam, Aparigraha. Yamas are normally explained as those practices in which we exercise restraint from certain things. So Yama indicates restrainments. So we hold ourselves back from doing certain actions. That is Yama. And whereas Niyamas, as you will see, are classified under observances. Certain things which we will not do in the normal, we may skip or omit in the normal course of the day-to-day activities, but which needs to be performed to progress in the path of yoga. So Yama, generally we can be translated as restraints or withdrawal from certain activities, and Niyama is mindfully engaging in certain activities which are conducive to the achievement or progress, achievement of progress in the path of yoga. So now there is a question. So the so-called Ashtasiddhis, do they have any relationship with Ashtanga? Mostly these Siddhis are discussed and described in the third pada, and the Siddhis are mostly achieved with Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi. Of course, certain extraordinary powers are achieved by the practice of Yama and Niyama also, but they are not classified under Siddhis by Patanjali. So the Siddhipada, in that Siddhipada you will get to see those things which are attained with the purpose of attaining them. Whereas here, as you will see in the coming sutras, you will see that the single-minded practice or a focused practice of Ahimsa, Satya, Asteya, Brahmacharya and Aparigraha will naturally result in certain higher powers. And so these are not associated with the Siddhis that Patanjali mentions in the Siddhipada. Whereas of course certain extraordinary powers are achieved by a single-minded practice of these. And Ahimsa, Satya, Asteya are practiced not with the goal or not with an objective to attain some extraordinary power. The sole objective of practicing Yama and Niyama, which includes Ahimsa, etc., is to cleanse the mind, is to prepare the mind, is to create an ambience in our mental environment which is conducive to yoga. So, these do not have the attainment of Siddhi as a goal. Whereas the Ashta Siddhi that you have mentioned in your question are attained only by having a desire and practicing certain practices which will be mentioned in the third pada to attain them. So, now these five aspects of yamas, as we see, have been explained with the definition given by Vyasa himself. So, in Vyasa Bhashya, you find the description of all these five limbs, the definition of the five limbs. What is Ahimsa? Vyasa says, Sarvatha, Sarvada, Sarvabhutanam, Anabhidrohaha. Anabhidrohaha, not harming. Not harming whom? All beings. All beings. From an insect to an elephant. So everything, all beings, anabhidrohaha, not harming all beings, when, always, sarvada. So not harming any being, any time, and sarvatha, under any condition. Even when the conditions are very adverse, even then a yogi or practicing of ahimsa should be done. So ahimsa means non-harming of sarvabhutas, of all beings without any exception, and at all times. It is not a part-time job, ahimsa. So practicing ahimsa at all times, and then, and sarvatha, under all conditions, whether it is conducive or unconducive, under all condition it should be practiced. Only then it becomes yoganga ahimsa. So sarvatha, sarvada, sarvabhutanam, anabhidrohaha, ahimsa. This is the description that Vyasa gives to ahimsa. And the second limb of yama is satyam, truth. And yatharthe vangmanase esha sarvabhuta upakarartham pravritta na bhuta upaghataya na bhuto upaghataya, which means satyam is yatharthe vangmanase, being factual, having, possessing only the facts. Yatharth, not ayatharth, very real. Yatharth means speaking what is truth or what is real, what is factual, both at the level of mind and at the level of speech. So the mind and the speech, vak and manasa, should be yatharta, should be factual. So it should possess this factual knowledge. That is satyam. Does this describe satya in totality? So speaking whatever has happened or whatever is factual, is this satyam in totality according to yoga? Vyasa adds a description to this. He says that the factual state of the speech and the mind, which is helpful to other beings. Esha sarvabhuta upakarartham pravritta. So that only becomes satya which is helpful to other beings. na bhuta upaghataya. The factual state of the speech and the mind, if it harms others, then it is not satyam. So, elsewhere also, it is the approach to satyam that yat bhuta hitam atyartha, yat bhuta hitam atyantam tat satyam iti dharana. What is satyam? That activities of the mind and speech which help the people, which help the other beings. Helping here does not mean some kind of a material help. The word hitam should be noted there in the verse which I uttered. Hitam is something different from sukham. Hitam is that which is the real welfare. And the sukham is only happiness. So, it should be the clarification or the distinction should be understood. So, the speech and the mind should be in such a factual state which helps in the hitam of others. Hitam is the real well-being. Though initially taking a medicine will be bitter, but finally it is hitam. It causes good health. So, this is hitam. Whereas sukham is just like eating some chocolate. It is, while experiencing, it gives happiness. But, it is not very good eating more chocolates. So, this distinction between hitam and sukham should be kept in mind in the context of satyam. So, our speaking factually, our thinking factually should be for the hitam of all the beings. Hitam sometimes may be bitter, but if it is for hitam, the factual nature of the speech and the mind is good, and it should not essentially be only for the sukham of the other beings. So yesha sarva bhuto upakarartham pravritta na bhuta upaghataya. So speaking the facts, thinking the facts, those that will help in the welfare or well-being of the of other fellow beings and not for harming others. So that is satyam, an intricate thing which needs to be reflected and understood experientially. So this is satyam. And then next comes asteyam. The next one is brahmacharyam. And the third one is aparigraha. So we will stop the class here. So we have seen two limbs of the yama, two constituents of yama, which are the restraints. So one has to restrain oneself from himsa, that is ahimsa, non-violence, and one should restrain oneself from asatyam, so that is satyam. These two aspects have been discussed. The other three we will take up in the upcoming class next week. Yes, even in Tirukkural, as Rama Mahadevan indicates, that poimayum vaimai idattu purai theertha. It is the same concept that is found in Nanmai Payakkumenin. Yes, it is found across all literature in India and even elsewhere. So, satyam refers to that thing. Yes. Okay. So, we will conclude here, and the next class will be as per schedule on Saturdays. So, we will end the class here. Yogena chittasya padena vacham malam sharirasya chavaidyakena yopakarottam pravaram muninam patanjalim pranjaliranatosmi. I thank everyone for attending this session, for adjusting their schedules and attending this class. Thank you.